This is the first one with Troughton and the planet Vulcan. No, not the one you're thinking of. And a Henry Ford-style Dalek conveyor belt. It's called The Power of the Daleks. Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space,
counting Daleks, Dalek, and the Cybertronic race.
Some Taurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales.
Who back when?
Reviewing all of who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello and welcome to episode C0, wait for it, 30 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Or, actually, as a buddy of mine, now I'm actually struggling to remember which buddy it was. I think it was Chris, it may have been Nick, may have been Rico, I think it was Chris. Anyway, thanks all three of you, probably Chris. You know what, Nick and Rico, really disappointed in you guys. What did you not think of this? He said the tagline needs to be renamed. It's not a Doctor Who podcast, it's a Doctor Who doc past. It's Who Back When, a Doctor Who doc past. I'm not putting that in writing. I will, however, probably drop that into an episode or two in the future. Nice one, Chris. I am Ponkin. Yes, I am. Who else would I be? Come on. And today I am... Yeah, you guessed it. I'm doing another solo episode. It's the very first Troughton serial ever that's up for review today. The Power of the Daleks. Holy smokes. I gotta say, straight off the bat, I'm digging Troughton. He is pretty awesome. I really like him. Okay, so here's the spiel. In case you've never listened to a solo episode of Who Back When before, you probably know lots of classic episodes went missing for one reason or another. You can still watch them, though, sort of. These so-called lost episodes are available in the form of telesnaps and slideshows and audiobooks. Which I guess you could look at, but they're much more effective if you just listen to them. Anyway, it's not the easiest thing in the world to plow through the roughly, whatever, 20 or so lost serials, so I'm doing those as solo missions. If you prefer listening to a review that consists of a dialogue between me, your humble host, and any one of my myriad co-hosts, then you should check out some of our other reviews. If you don't mind a semi-unscripted monologue, because that's basically what this is going to be. I mean, I'm basically just going to do a soliloquy about the power of the Daleks here. If you don't mind that, then you know what? Stick around. What else are you going to do? Have you seen the weather outside? It's awful. Okie dokie, are you still there? That is tremendously bodacious. Thank you so much for sticking around. You're on the list, buddy. I like you. The second Doctor, Ben and Polly materialize on the planet Vulcan, not the one you're thinking of, one presumes, where Doc witnesses a murder and is bludgeoned and subsequently mistaken for, quote, the examiner from Earth by the local human colonists. Obviously there are human colonists. Turns out three things of interest are happening on Vulcan. Number one, opponents of the Vulcan governor are planning a coup. Number two, scientists have made an astonishing discovery, a spacecraft that crashed on the planet centuries ago. And number three, in case you weren't paying attention earlier, Jesus Christ, some dude just got murdered in the opening act. When on top of all of that, though, the new Doctor realizes what hides inside the spacecraft, all hell breaks loose. End of Vscow. You are welcome. Holy crap. See? This has all the makings of I'm assuming based on the title of this serial, you already know what hides inside the spacecraft. I mean, if you hadn't already seen and or heard this before. But, oh man, it has all the makings of such a great Doctor Who serial. Anyway, alright. So here we go. Before I start, I'm gonna put this into context and I'm gonna give you a little bit of introductory trivia. First, the context. As I said before, this is a lost serial. It's a six-parter, and every single episode, all six episodes, are missing. There are like, I don't know, maybe 4 minutes of actual footage that you can enjoy in this serial, but as in across all six episodes, but the rest is all lost. So what I watched, and what you can watch, and I just found these just by Googling them. I think I saw them on Dailymotion, so just like, give it a Google. There are telesnaps of this, which are sort of like the Loose Cannon Productions... recons. In fact, I'm not sure. Maybe Loose Cannon Productions did this. They look a lot like their other recons, except someone's animated the mouth, so like stuff is moving around, and it's actually not that difficult to watch. It's really quite enjoyable. Numero dos, there is an actual recon that's just still images. Number three, I listened to not one, but two audiobook versions of this story. One, which was narrated by Annika Wills, who plays Polly, aka Duchess, and another one, which was narrated by, wait for it, are you holding on to your pacemaker? It was narrated by Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor himself, and it is... Actually, you know what? Both of them are really good. The Tom Baker one is definitely the one I preferred. I'm not going to say that it's better or worse. Actually, fuck it. I'm going to say it. It is better. It's a great, great audiobook. The Annika Wills one is... It just feels heavily scripted, and her English is just... She just sounds so posh. No, basically, it's her reading out a script, and it doesn't feel like... Maybe she wasn't allowed to be that engaged by the whole thing when she read it out. Maybe she was told by the director, just be factual, just read this, because that's kind of what comes across. With Tom Baker, the script is a little bit different as well. Like, he, every now and then, he'll make a reference to something else that's Whovian in nature, but that isn't part of this serial, just putting it into a context, into a different kind of Doctor Who context. And he tells it from the point of view of... Actually, yeah, that's the better way of describing the difference between these two audiobooks. The Annika Wills one is just a plot point by plot point retelling of The Power of the Daleks, while the Tom Baker one, which I strongly suggest that you have a listen to, in that one, he tells it from the point of view of his later regeneration, his later personality. He's basically like, he tells it from the point of view of the fourth Doctor. So he says stuff like, oh, this was just my first regeneration. Back then, I had no dress sense. Back then, I would do these things. Oh, well, I had such a temperament when I was so young, blah, blah, blah. It's really, really charming. Anyway, so give that a listen. That's the context. There you go. Now some introductory trivia. The Power of the Daleks was written by David Whittaker. Now, David Whittaker may be... Well, actually, yeah, David Whittaker is a name that ought to be familiar to you if you've been listening to Who Back When for a while now. Or if you're just a jolly good spiffing Whovian. Here we go. I'm going to bring up the list because I don't actually remember this super well. Here are some Doctor Who serials he has written. He wrote, I'm going to start off with a really shit one. The Edge of Destruction. That's right, David Whittaker wrote Edge. Oh my god, it's terrible. I hate it. I know all of my co-hosts don't agree with me. I know Flapjack agrees with me. JD, less so. Edge, you just watch Edge. It's really weird. He did, however, also write The Rescue. Slightly better. Then he wrote The Crusade. That's a fantastic one. Then came this one, The Power of the Daleks, and he continued with, I'm literally just reading this off TARDIS Wikia now, The Evil of the Daleks, The Enemy of the World, The Wheel in Space, another legendary one, and The Ambassadors of Death, yet another classic one. Holy crap. He also wrote a few Doctor Who novels and some Doctor Who-related Dalek books. He wrote The Dalek Book, in fact, The Dalek World, and The Dalek, wait for it, Outer Space Book. actually, he co-wrote all those Dalek ones with Terry Nation himself, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, there you go, David Whittaker. And as though that weren't enough, obviously there were several different drafts of this serial during production, and he didn't pen the final draft. The final draft was penned by the Spoonmeister. Yeah, check him out, Dennis Spooner. We've covered his filmography on prior Who Back When reviews, so, you know, have a listen to our back catalogue. Next trivia point, there is a trailer for this serial, apparently. I haven't seen it, but there is one apparently, according to which this takes place in the year 2020. So it's before the Dalek invasion of Earth, but it's after lots of other Dalek encounters, right? As in Earth encounters with Daleks. So really there's no excuse for the humans, spoiler alert, in this serial not to have any idea what a Dalek is, but there you have it, whatever. Last trivia point before you jump into this serial. The location, the planet Vulcan. Complete and utter coincidence. Star Trek didn't rip off the name. Well, nor did Doctor Who. It's just a complete coincidence. However, interesting to note, the planet Vulcan will be visited by the seventh Doctor. Not on TV, though. In an audiobook called Survival of the Fittest. I haven't listened to it. I'm not entirely sure if it's an audiobook we're going to get to anytime soon. But something tells me JD's listened to it, and probably one or two of our listeners as well. So, Yeah, you guys should totally chime in. Okie dokie, let's jump into The Power of the Daleks. Episode 1. Okay, I think I'll start with something that may be completely wrong. So I'm looking forward to you guys putting me in my place on Twitter. I really should double check this now, but I'm pretty sure the Doctor regenerates with new clothes and all. Like, he's now wearing his Troughton costume. Quite recently, JD and I reviewed the transformation of Eccleston's Ninth Doctor into Tennant's Tenth, where we're treated to this sumptuous view of the TARDIS wardrobe. That's in The Christmas Invasion. Have a listen to that review as well, if you haven't already. It's pretty kick-ass. Anyway, there's no equivalent scene here, which is actually pretty interesting, because in, I want to say, the audiobook narrated by Tom Baker, there's an actual mention of his old clothes now looking too large for him. So either this is just missing from the recon, or maybe it was retcon for the audiobook. Or maybe I'm mistaken. God damn it, I probably am mistaken. Because of the ring thing. Whatever, you win some, you lose some. I am not going to edit that out. The ring thing is that as he's now much smaller than Hartnell, who, by the way, was pretty small to begin with, his ring slips off his finger. Now, I haven't seen the following Troughton eps yet, so this may be explained later on, but the Doc doesn't now pop it on a chain around his neck, or wear it on a brooch, or use that as a suppository, or anything. In fact, the ring is never mentioned again in this entire serial. What the F, Doc? This ring's pretty dog-derned important. It can unlock the TARDIS, for Time Lord's sake. It can control a mind-warped Zarbi. But nope. Nada. Nothing. He may as well have handed it over to that douchebag Menoptera towards the end of the Web Planet. Hold up. Another Who Back When plug, if you haven't seen the Web Planet. Don't. unless you're also a fan of self-flagellation and fecal porn. But if you haven't listened to our review of it, then put that right at the top of your bucket list, buddy. I did that review with fellow Who Back When founder Flapjack, and biased though I am, it's one of my faves. All right, back to the power of the Daleks, sorry about that. Right, so Troughton's adjusting. Jesus, I haven't got past the opening scene yet. He's adjusting to his new body, and not feeling, understandably, 100% himself. Interestingly, in the Baker audiobook, this is described as the second of his allotted 12 lives, which isn't entirely accurate, right? Anyway, because he's now smaller, the ring slips off his finger, and Benny mistaking the real world that is the piece of fiction before our awe-inspired eyes for a reenactment of Cinderella basically goes, well, if the ring fits, and tries to prove the Doctor's not the Doctor because the ring, well, won't, which is pretty bonkers. Anyway, it's actually a little reminiscent of Capaldi's regeneration, though, or I suppose that's the other way around. He's saying stuff that makes no sense, like he's practicing his English in a way, speaking hurriedly in riddles and so on. The difference to Capaldi being, though, that he's not as panicky, albeit in an equal amount of pain, and he also conveniently has a treasure trove of souvenirs from his past life, including two objects you've no doubt encountered in your Google image searches for the Second Doctor, namely a flute that he will be playing a lot in the eps to come, and the 500-year diary. It actually even says 500-year diary on the cover. Yeah, those are like the top two Kodak moments, it seems, of Patrick Troughton. Let's examine this diary for a moment. A, it's no Shantaram. Why did I pick that as an example? Fuck Shantaram. What an epic waste of time that was. Literally. Actually, yes, literally. it's no Anna Karenina. It's not long, is what I'm trying to say. And you may want to debunk that and go, it may be written in Gallifreyan and thus possibly more condensely than in English. But then why is the cover title in English? Huh? Gotcha. B. Tom Baker clearly says that those 500 years cover his first life as Hartnell. No debunking required. The Doc's an old man. We know he's over a millennium at this point. And there's even the 400-year period that the Eighth Doctor spent on the planet, what's it called, in the Doctor Who audiobook, Orbis? Oh, actually, that's what the planet was called. Anyway, those 400 years are totally glazed over in Doctor Who lore. What I wanted to... The reason I'm bringing this up, though, is... Holy smokes, if he was... He spent 500 years in the form of William Hartnell, so to speak, in that first body. And then every other body thereafter, he spends, like, maybe 4 to 7 years as? That's gotta suck balls. I mean, with the exception of the Eighth Doctor, which is 400 plus years. But, like, every other Doctor, it must feel like, oh, I basically didn't even try out this body. It's already dead. I'm already turning into another Doctor. Wow. Yeah, so no wonder Hartnell is so wise and actually so cranky. Anyway, whatever. Carrying on with the diary, C. We have literally never ever seen Hartnell write in his diary. Despite this fact, Troughton asks Polly, the doctor kept a diary, right? And Duchess replies with a hearty, fuck yeah he did, and diligently so. Anyway, another important thing he finds in his drawer, forgot to mention, was a piece of Dalekanium that he pockets for no apparent reason. Or, by the way, as Tom Baker puts it, Dalekanium, which sounds absolutely lovely, by the way. Anyway, we then get a lot of Ben and Polly not believing he's the Doctor, then Polly thinking maybe he's the Doctor, and then Troughton checks out his reflection in a mirror in a scene that is at once very Twin Peaks and very heartwarming, because his reflection momentarily changes into Hartnell, which is the last time he'll appear on the show until the Three Doctors in 1970 or whatever. But yeah, very Twin Peaks. Troughton could easily just have turned to the camera and gone, how's Annie? Anyway, blah, 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 blah. Shit, still in the opening scene here. Sorry, guys, there is just lots of interesting stuff here, to be quite frank. Anyway, so he maneuvers the TARDIS controls. They dematerialize and then rematerialize elsewhere. We'll find out shortly. And Doc says something I think confirms my suspicion in our last Classic Who review, The Tenth Planet, namely that the regeneration isn't a genetic thing at this point in Doctor Who, but a TARDIS thing. Because he says he needs the TARDIS. In fact, he couldn't survive without it. Boom, I'd drop my mic if it weren't a tabletop one. And further to the retcon, Jesus, these are deep pulls. In the Tom Baker audiobook, which was recorded at a point when regeneration was genetic, they've cut out that line of Troughton's and replaced it with the line of Baker's in which he says all Gallifreyans have 12 lives. Yada yada yada. Now I'll speed up. Doc opens the door. Benny pulls a who back when and complains that he didn't even check the oxygen levels, but Doc's, like, totally on the ball and gives him the readings. Kablammo. They've materialized on the planet Vulcan. Not the Dr. Spock one, I presume, where Doc goes off on his own, inspects some, quote, plutonic igneous, which sounds pretty dangerous, by the way. Then encounters a dude who introduces himself as the Earth Examiner and is then promptly shot dead. The Examiner is, not Doc. See how I'm speeding now, by the way? So Doc checks the body, takes an ID badge off it, and is promptly bludgeoned from behind, presumably by the murderer of said Examiner. Fun trivia fact, Tom Baker describes the bludgeoning as, quote, as sharp as a pteroleptil's hunting knife. I looked them up, I had no idea, I confess, I had no idea who the pteroleptils were. So I did look them up, and they appeared in The Visitation and in Time Flight, and were actually referenced in the recent Time Heist as well. Great ep, by the way. And side note, Doc's now wearing a hat that was indubitably the inspiration for Pharrell's signature headgear. No matter. Meanwhile, Benny and Duchess are wandering around this clearly radioactive swamp, getting more and more sterile by the second, and they're knocked unconscious as well, but by toxic swamp vapors in this case. So, you know, good thing Doc checked those readings, eh? Bada bing, two human colonists, Bragan, head of security, and Quinn, deputy governor, find Doc and his companions, take him to be the Examiner, and they all head off to the nearest base. But, so here's the thing. Doc wakes up but feigns unconsciousness so that he can eavesdrop on Bragan and Quinn and learns, and I'll try to be more concise from here on in, that some guy named Lesterson has found a spacecraft. That's pretty much it. That's all he hears. Trivia alert, by the way, before I move on. Bragan is played by Bernard Archard, who later returns in one of my absolute favourite serials of all time, a Tom Baker one, surprise, surprise, namely Pyramids of Mars, in which he plays Marcus Scarman. Back to the show. In the base, meanwhile, Lesterson, he's a scientist, he has a chat with his assistant, a woman named Jan Lee, in which he, let's call him Les, tells her, let's call her Jan, that he's pissed the Examiner's turned up, no doubt to check out his new discovery, and that he disapproves of Jan having dealings with a bunch of contrarians, aka, like, the rebels from, you know, B-Scow fame. So here's a pisser offer, though. In Baker's audiobook, let's rewind to when he was feigning unconsciousness. In Baker's audiobook, the Doc knows about their conversation. But how could he? Has Doc now also developed ESP? Ugh. Another trivia alert, the actor playing Lesterson, that's Les to you and me, Mr. Robert James will later return to Doctor Who as well, in the part of the High Priest in the Fourth Doctor serial The Mask of Mandragora. Robert James. I love it when people have either surnames that are first names or vice versa. It's pretty great. All right, no matter. Our travellers are taken to the base. where they meet Lesterson et al. And are taken to see the recovered space capsule that crashed on Vulcan, still not the Spock one, centuries ago. And whammy, the Doctor finds a piece of the capsule that's allegedly fallen off, except it's not just any piece, it's identical, coincidence alert, to the bit of Dalekanium the Doc pocketed in the TARDIS. Holy crap! So Lesterson now, whatever, he demonstrates how he can gain access to only a small part of the capsule, and explains that it's made of a material that will revolutionize space travel because it crashed centuries ago, right? And it's perfectly intact. But the Doctor, knowing what's up, tells him to shut his face and halt work for the day. Bing bong, cut to later in the evening. The lab is empty. No one's around. Pretty atmospheric. And Polly and Ben are now following the Doc as he sneaks back into the lab. Oh, why am I doing it in that weird voice? Whatever. So we get the coincidence alert confirmation and learn that the two pieces are in fact Dalek keys. And the Doc uses one of them, which one, goodness knows, to gain full access now to the space capsule and finds, dum-dum-dum, two cobwebbed Daleks in there. Looks like there used to be a third one as well, but it's currently missing. Whoa, foreshadowing. The travelers are now united inside the capsule and Doc introduces his companions to the Daleks.
Come in and meet the Daleks. What? Daleks.
Nota bene, this is the first time they have ever seen Daleks, and they clearly have no idea what they are at all. Let's put a pin in that. And then all of a sudden, an actual honest-to-God Dalek appears. I mean, the actual gloopy scrotal blob that normally resides inside the metal casing, and it scurries across the floor like a facehugger, scaring the bejesus out of Duchess. They have another look around, and she goes,
I'm a big lefty!
Even though they literally just saw a live one. Fucking hell, Polly. Ugh, alright, whatever. A more prescient question here might be, how is the Dalek still alive? Yeah, you may ask just that, but hang on, I will present a theory about that when we get to episode 2. Which reminds me, end of episode 1, episode 2. Okay, so here's my theory. And I did a bunch of thinking about this one because at first it annoyed the heck out of me. The Daleks, spoiler alert, they're gonna start constructing a whole bunch more Daleks in a few eps time. And I have a bone to pick with that when I get there as well, but we'll get there when we get there. There are clearly a lot. Okay, hang on. I will approach this differently. My first line of thinking was, Lesterson has taken custody of the third Dalek in order to perform experiments on it. Sorry, this bit is going to be spoiler heavy, right? And the Dalek scampering across the floor must have been that third Dalek. Id effing est, Lesterson only has an empty Dalek casing, but clearly there is intelligence in it, right? So the renegade scrotum we saw before would have had to have been a fourth Dalek. Then I thought, how the balls did a naked Dalek survive under the harsh conditions of the capsule for centuries? But there are tons of Daleks on board. Must be, right? So presumably they're in stasis or something, and you could make the argument, in fact I would, that when Lesterson got in there, he accidentally triggered one Dalek to come out of stasis or something. And since, surprise, surprise, we never hear anything about the naked Dalek again, which is, like, mind-boggling, you could just assume that it either crawls into a crevice of the capsule and dies because it can't survive without its casing, or, at most, it crawled away and was then popped in a casing later on when they start manufacturing the shit out of them. Spoilers. So there. Debunked and, I don't know, bunked. Whatever. Doctor deduces that Lesterson's been in there already and must have taken the third Dalek. They exit the capsule and are surreptitiously observed by Resno. Let's call him Trent Reznor. Who's another one of Lesterson's... Why do I call him Lesterson? He's another one of Les's? Oh, alright, when I use the possessive, I will go Lesterson. I'm gonna go full Lesterson on this. Trent Reznor is another one of Lesterson's lab assistants. Then Les appears, Doc straight up bitch slaps him, and we get our first and possibly only line F-up of this serial.
You found the inner compartment containing three Daleks?
Bragan pops around now too, and Les lies to him and says he's never seen the Daleks before and certainly hasn't taken one of them to experiment on. So, sure, that's true. Everyone leaves except Les, who now reveals that he's stored the third Dalek in a secret compartment in his lab, or maybe actually in the capsule, I can't really remember now. And we get a moment of Frankensteinian exposition as he twirls his metaphorical mustache and creepily says he will bring it back to life or something to that effect. Anyway, Bregan and the gang are now together, and this is now where the Doc learns about the Rebels, as Bregan warns him about them, even though in the world of the Fourth Doctor, as in the Tom Baker narrated audiobook, he probably already knew, right? Via some extrasensory perception. Bregan disappears, yada yada yada, I'll speed on now. He disappears, and we get a scene where Polly believes he is the Doc, Benny doesn't believe that he is the Doc. I forgot to say before, by the way, he was suddenly convinced, now he's back to not being so. The Doc starts helping himself to some fruit in their quarters, while spouting lots of madcap phrases and rhymes, etc., and lo and behold, they find a microphone in a piece of fruit, and it turns out the Doc was just playing a fool because he knew they were being surveilled. But how the hell did the mic get in there? Do they, like, strap microphones to baby apples on trees? Sort of akin to how you get, you know, the large ripe pears in bottles and whatnot? In fact, screw that, why would you bug something edible? That is such a dumb plan. Alright, so Bregan pops around again and says that they can't see the governor until the following day, so the Doc and co. now make their way to the communications room, only to find that the whole place has been smashed to smithereens. In fact, we're going to learn that this has now not only cut them off from comms with Earth, but even any comms on the base. And let's put a pin in that as well. Actually, let's not. Suffice to say, that does not pan out. Meanwhile, Jan, Les, and Trent Reznor are jerking each other off in the lab, and Reznor is not pleased that Jan's sided with the Rebels. Blah, 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 blah. They're tinkering with the Dalek, and now activate. Dun, dun, dun. It's Gunn and Eyestalk. Bad idea genes, guys, because the Dalek now, can't remember exactly how, but it shoots Resno, and Jan claims he's just been knocked out, even though, spoiler alert, he is dead as balls. So, first blood. Lesterson exits stage left, and Jan now doesn't quite, but might as well, reenact that sexy Dalek photo shoot with upcoming Classic Who companion Joe Grant. That is, she doesn't, obviously, at all, really. But she does go all Frankensteinian on its ass. Don't know the photo shoot I was referring to, by the way? Just Google image search, Katie Manning hugs a Dalek. Safe search off, people, and preferably do it at work while your line manager stands behind you. Alright, let's leave that fantasy for a moment. Back in the show, I'm not entirely sure, but I think she may also detach the gun stick at this point. Not sure about that. Actually, yeah, I am sure about that. She does. Yeah. Just trust me, I'm an expert. Shazam! The following day, Quinn, remember that dude? Head of security. He maintains his innocence to Bregan and Hensel, that's the governor. And then they all, Doc and co. included, head over to a Dalek demonstration headed up by Les and Jan, who have now totally covered up the shooting of Trent Reznor. They show off the firing capabilities of the Dalek, assure the governor that they're in perfect control of the machine, and even though the Dockhammer begs them to destroy the diabolical thing, Les convinces Hensel otherwise, because, quote, it can help them with processing and packaging, end quote. How could it possibly help them package anything? Plus, it has a massive weapon. How does that factor into processing and packaging? How often do you use a laser while doing paperwork or wrapping birthday presents? Ugh. Blah, blah, blah. Forgot to say earlier, Les, who still reckons the Dalek is just a robot, reckons it has a positronic brain. Now, I'm not 100% sure what positronic even means, to be honest, but the Star Trek TNG gland in my brain started thumping when I heard that. Pretty nice. Felt really good. We end the episode with the Dalek telling them,
I am your servant.
End of episode 2. Episode 3. In which we learn that, A, Hensel is totally engorged by the idea of impressing his superiors on Earth with the rise in production, i.e. processing and packaging, that this alleged robot will allow for, and B, that Quinn was the one who sent for the examiner in the first place to look into the rebel situation on Vulcan, so he's not likely to be the bad guy here. Bregan convinces Hensel that Quinn's actually just after Hensel's job, and Hensel has Quinn arrested and Bregan promoted to deputy governor. Yeah, Bregan is rising in the ranks. And if this seems a little bit confusing the way I'm telling it to you, I don't mind saying it basically took the recon and two audiobooks for me to figure out which bureaucrat was which bureaucrat. There are actual gubernatorial politics going on in this serial. Pretty cool. Alright, so, anyway, meanwhile, Doc now tests, and sorry, I may be getting the order a little bit wrong here, doesn't matter, Doc now tests how far the Dalek is prepared to go to feign stability, and he does this by ordering it to turn itself off, which the Dalek pretends to do. The Doc exits stage right, clearly seeing through the charade, At which point the Dalek springs back to life and tells Hensel and Les that the only reason it disobeyed a direct order from a human, was in order to be able to continue to obey orders. Which is pretty paradoxical, I think. I mean, Hensel and Lesterson, pretty naive to buy that. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Dagnabbit, I really need to keep the pace up. I'll bullet point this next bit. Okay, here we go. Boom. The doc fashions some sort of handheld device back in his quarters, then heads back to the lab. Kablamo! Lesterson is testing Dalek 347 by asking it A-level style questions about Earth chemistry and physics, which 347 obviously has no problem answering because, why? Shazam! 347 pulls a Keys of Marinus and goes,
"A Dalek is bet. Is not the same as a human."
Megaplop then goes on to say,
"Daleks can build computers with 100% accuracy."
Which I feel is a little odd. Lesterson obviously gets a boner at this thought, though. But wouldn't a computer that performs with 100% accuracy, i.e. that is theoretically infallible, right? Would it not be more advanced than a motorized dustbin? I mean, we could easily get into a philosophical debate here, but I feel that theoretical infallibility must reasonably lead to practical infallibility under any given circumstance. And you could present the counter-hypothesis that theoretical infallibility could only be a short to present theoretical solutions to practical problems, i.e. devise methods for overcoming obstacles that would not necessarily be at hand under circumstances other than alternate theoretical ones. But then we'd have to start a new podcast geared towards ruminating such lowbrow philosophical theorems. Long story short, my point is the Dalek design is unapologetically idiotic. And something as clever as it purports to be wouldn't have crashed on Vulcan in the first place, or anywhere for that matter, right? Makes no sense. Ugh. Alright, so much for speeding through this ep. Okay, alright. Another attempt at that then. Yada yada yada, Doc uses his device to nearly short-circuit 347, but is thwarted by Les. Doc leaves. Basically no consequences to his safety here, by the way. He leaves. And my next note here was actually proven wrong. I've written, plot hole, it just occurred to me these Daleks can't move anywhere. But that problem is actually addressed in the next ep. A few more things before the end of this ep and my first smoke break and martini top-up. Jan-Jan meets Bragan and we learn Bragan's just a power-hungry madman who's siding with the rebels to dethrone the governor. They agree to use the detached gunstick that I mentioned before to seize control of the colony. Even though Bragan's not totally chuffed when Jan-Jan confirms Trent Reznor's dead as balls and she dumped his body in the swamp because she's that cold. Whatever. 347 convinces Les that it can build him another computer that computes infallibly, as long as Les gives it more power and materials. Let's put a pin in that as well. The other two Daleks in the capsule are activated now too, and Polly is chloroformed and kidnapped by Jan-Jan and I think a henchman of hers or something. Some other lab assistant, presumably. I can't really remember. May have been Valma. Oh, well, we'll get to Valma. Doesn't matter. Bragan fingers the doctor, figuratively, as a fake examiner, and the doc counterfingers him, figuratively, as the murderer of the real examiner, because how else could he know Doc's not the real McCoy, right? Which leads to a stalemate. And we end the ep with the Daleks chanting,
"We will get our power.
End of episode 3. Seamless break in recording so that I may indulge in my vices. Wow, I make a wicked martini. Episode 4, in which Annika Wills is on holiday. And in which not much happens, so this'll be quick. Hensel's off on a tour of the colony perimeter when the Doc and Ben receive a note saying Apo Polylogies has been kidnapped, which, at the time I was thinking, why? But it turns out it is an actual piece of official trivia. Annika Wills was on holiday, so that's why they kidnapped her. They show the note to Bragan, which again, why? And he obviously doesn't care, because he's now de facto the acting governor. Boom! Doc Hammond now says the whole thing about the floors not being metal, and how much longer can the Daleks move around sans static electricity, blah 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 blah, when all of a sudden he sees more than three Daleks trundle around the base. So, oh my, they are multiplying. And clearly, the whole static electricity blah blah, or rather lack thereof, is on the writer's mind as well. Meanwhile, in the lab, Jan-Jan tells Les about Trent Reznor's untimely demise. She comes clean, basically, and says that she'll happily blame him for it, which obviously shakes him up. And now Doc and Ben enter and manage to convince Les the Daleks aren't just machines, but in fact ruthless evil monsters, At which point, wait for it, he faints. What a wuss. Jan-Jan claims Doc attacked Lesterson and has a guard escort them out of the lab. Again, zero consequences for the Doc. He's just constantly accused of physically damaging either property or personnel. And he's basically just escorted out of rooms all the time. It's ridiculous. All right, whatever. At that point, Jan-Jan then feeds even more power to the Daleks. Okay, the title of this serial literally just made more sense to me. How had I not thought about that? Okay, I get it now. The power of the Daleks. Fuck. I'm an idiot. All right, boom. Really close to the end of this ep. Doc and Ben find a notice board and discover a hidden message encoded upon it stating that the rebels are about to hold a meeting somewhere. So off they go to Gatecrash. And what do they find? Two things. Number one, Jan-Jan's there confessing that they've kidnapped Polly. And number two, Bragan is the leader of the rebels. Bragan then has Benny knocked out, frames the Doctor for the murder of the real examiner, and finally has him arrested and plopped in a sonically locked cell. Very important detail, by the way. Adjacent to another cell in which is who? That's right, Quinn. The other bureaucrats, well, actually head of security or former head of security, whom you had probably already forgotten about. And Doc now starts spilling proverbial beans left, right and center. He just tells Quinn all about it. Everything. Meanwhile, Les regains consciousness and stumbles into the capsule where, holy smokes guys, the Daleks have set up this massive Henry Ford style conveyor belt operation where they're just assembling new Daleks, which is the end of this ep. But before we move on, I want to go back to that pin. Which pin? The materials one. Les and later Jan-Jan, they have been furnishing the Daleks with various building materials, right? And clearly that's what was used to build even more Daleks. So... God damn it. Two things. One, they must have received a metric nut ton of metals and stuff. So why did Lesterson and Jan-Jan never stop to think, this flawless computer the Daleks are building... Actually, sorry, it wasn't a flawless computer. It was a flawless, meteor detection device or something. Anyway, why did they never stop to think this device is taking up way too many resources? As in, it shouldn't need this much metal, for instance. And two, these new Daleks ought to be relatively harmless, at least compared to regular ones. I mean, they aren't made of Dalekanium, are they? Unless they're stripping the pod for materials, which I suspect they wouldn't be able to do unnoticed. Plus, the pod's still there, and they've built, a dozen Dalek casings? And sure, I know there are three fully functioning, original Daleks among them, 347 included, but it'd be we should fall back. Pew, 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 they're unstoppable. Pew, pew, oh no, you know what? Actually, no, turns out most of them are made of styrofoam and egg cartons. Unless, what other materials do you need from us, 347? Kevlar, glue. Alright, also, these new Daleks look like, they look like Daleks, but I feel like they shouldn't. What I'm thinking is, they're basically pulling a Tony Stark in that cave in Iron Man, right? 347 is a captive of his circumstances. He's made to build some device, asks for metal to do so, builds a different device instead, boom. And Tony Stark never asked the Taliban for red and gold paint, so his creation came out looking a little less sleek. This principle does not apply here. The Daleks go, "We need materials." Pretty sure that's a quote, by the way. As in, that's how vague it is. And out the other end come fully formed, totally shiny and badass-looking Daleks. Anyway, I'm ranting for no reason. Apologies to whomever hasn't turned off this podcast yet. End of episode. Episode 5, in which Michael Kreis is on holiday instead. And which I think I can speed through again. First off, we start with the Daleks telling each other...
We are the new world of the family. We are the
And I like that, because surely they already know this, but they still insist on chanting it. Les immediately turns off the power altogether to try to stop them, and this is where we get the explanation for their power. Again, this title makes perfect sense to me now. It turns out they can store power, so they're running on batteries now. And in fact, they've upped their own energy supply as well, which is pretty worrying. And which they justify by pulling another Keys of Marinus. Soundbite? Soundbite.
With static power, the Daleks will be twice as useful.
Lesterson has now made a complete character turn. He is super annoying. Okay, that's maybe not the biggest character turn he's made, but he's going through some sort of nervous breakdown at this point as he realizes what is going on and tells Jan-Jan and Bragan, both of whom just ignore and or accuse him of being a madman and or have him detained. Actually, he's not detained for a little bit, but whatever, that happens. Jan-Jan, meanwhile, also gets Polly, now back from holiday, into the lab and locks her in the capsule. Why? That makes no sense. Wherever she was being held by the secret bloody rebels, it must have been pretty secret, right? It must have been secret enough, surely. And Duchess tries to explain to them how wrong they are about the Daleks.
Don't you see? Human beings can't be friends with Daleks. They don't have friends.
I don't see why not.
It's a kind of hatred for anything unlike themselves. They think they're superior.
But how the shit does Duchess know what the Daleks are like? She only met them 4 episodes ago, and they've been, outwardly, pretty harmless so far. In fact, in her mind, she should be going like, oh, these Daleks, they seem infinitely nicer than you fucking scoundrel rebel biped pieces of shit who just kidnapped me for no reason whatsoever. And who put gum in my hair? Ugh. Anyway, so that's a return to the very first pin that I put in there. All right, couple ammo. We cut to the Doctor who's trying... the Doctor who's trying to unlock the sonic door mechanism by running his finger around the rim of a glass of water, which is, I think you'll agree, pretty amazeballs. It doesn't work, unfortunately. So he pulls out his recorder now and starts playing again, one random tone from which actually does open the door. Or rather, it opens the door to Quinn's cell. Even more amazeballs. So now they Clint Eastwood the hell out of there. The real governor has returned from his excursion now, by the way, but is met by everyone, his guards and Bragan alike, with disdain. Not the most loyal people, these guards. Then Bragan basically refuses to hand back control of the colony, and actually has Hensel arrested, and in fact, immediately thereupon, killed. Rah, 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 Doc and Quinn are immediately recaptured by Bragan and his henchmen, at which point the Daleks mobilize in full force, and we end the episode on the first proper exterminate.
We will strike
and exterminate. 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 Exterminate.
And the Daleks shouting,
Daleks conquer and destroy.
Over and over again. End of episode 5, episode 6. This will be another quick one, I reckon. Okay, here's what happens. Listerson's running around like a madman, spouting paranoia at every turn. The Daleks are going to take over, they can even read our thoughts, yada yada yada, and so on. At the same time, Jan-Jan tells Bragan all is rad and rocking because their rebellion has succeeded, right? But Bragan now wants to kill the rebels as well. He's not done. Which one of the main rebel honchos, Valma, I think I may have mentioned him earlier, he overhears. So now the rebels are no longer on Bragan's side either. In fact, Valma goes to find Ben, now back from holiday as well, and tells him something along the lines of, dude, chill, we're all brothers, right? And then he sets off to find the Doc. What else? Okay. Remember how Doc and Quinn were captured, then they escaped the cells, then they were recaptured by Bragan's henchmen? Well, their party is overrun by Daleks and they escape again, only to be caught by some other rebels this time, whereupon the Daleks turn up again, and yeah, you guessed it, they escape again. Rinse and repeat. I'm really just powering through this one. Sorry, it's 11 p.m. and I have work in the morning, so you know what? Cut me some slack. Just kidding. Long story short, all hell breaks loose at this point. Episode 6, let me explain this. Episode 6 is basically just one long battle, with a few cutscenes that further the plot and get bad guys killed. So there's not much else I can do really but speed through it. Justified. Okay, so next cutscene of importance is Jan-Jan undoing the earlier plot twist of Valma overhearing her apparent betrayal by saying she's actually totes still on their side, and they ask a trio of Daleks to help them, which is ridiculous. Surely at this point they must realize that there is no point in relying on Daleks to fight for their cause. God damn it. And in fact, one of the Daleks, let's assume it's 347, says, yeah, sure, I'm on board with that. Please can you take me to the middle of where most of the humans are congregated? That is not a joke. He literally asks that. And Jan-Jan and Valma, who are so goddamn bloody stupid, and who think that they have the Daleks under control, they agree. And obviously the Dalek just start killing everybody. And on the radio, we can hear people, gods and rebels alike, dying in droves. Which, by the way, let's go back to an earlier pin. Remember how all communications in the colony were disrupted by the comms room being destroyed? Well, clearly someone forgot about that between episodes 2 and 6, or possibly I'm just mistaken, I suppose. Do you know which one it is? Let's make this podcast even more interactive. Pop a comment on this post on the website. Almost done now, by the way. The Doc's devised a plan to short-circuit all of the Daleks in one fell swoop, and while he fidgets with cables and wirings and whatnot, Lesterson distracts the Daleks to buy him the time that he needs. In fact, by first pulling a 347, he says,
"I am your servant."
And then straight up sacrificing himself to the death in his aorta. Why did I say that? Allowing the Doc to finish his work and, ta-da, destroy all of the Daleks. Bragan's finally killed by Valma, so the bad guy, like the main bad honcho, is now dead. And Quinn, of Clint Eastwooding out of jail fame, is the new de facto leader of the Vulcan colony. Ta-da, bing bong bing, la-la-la-la-la-la, happy endings. Only downside, however, is the Doc also managed to knock out all of the electricity in the colony, and just as, like, a final excremental icing on his lack of gratitude, Quinn is actually pissed off that the Doc didn't do things differently. Like, what the shit, Quinn? So what if you can't charge your phones? Okay, hang on. Wait. Tangent. The other day I was telling a buddy of mine, Tom. Yo, Tominator, in case you're listening, which you're probably not, about this serial. But I said vibrators instead of phones, adding that one might assume vibrators weren't likely to have been battery operated in the 60s. And he just said, yeah, still beats the old hand crank ones they had to use before. Nice. Anyway, just wanted to say that. So, the Doc and Co. now get the crap out of Dodge before, as the Doc says, they leave them with the bill. End of The Power of the Daleks, and thus, the first Patrick Troughton serial. I'm going to break for a cigarette.
Review.
I feel like I've sort of sped through this episode, so I'm not entirely sure what I've left out. I feel like it's been very plot-centric as opposed to judgmental. Whatever, I'm gonna speed through this anyway. Start off in the plus column, man. Troughton is really pretty great. I guess it's hard to tell, and it's hard to pass judgment on a new Doctor after just one episode, obviously. I mean, every single time nowadays when we get a new Doctor, oh, we've had this conversation on Who Back When so many times already, but in the context of New Who rather than Classic Who. And this is the first time, really, that I'm experiencing this in Classic Who. Really. I wouldn't count Tom Baker appearing, because Tom Baker was always there for me as a kid. And I wouldn't count Sylvester McCoy turning into Paul McGann, because that's just in the film, really, and whatever. So, for Classic Who, this is the first time that this has happened to me. And really, it oughtn't be that different from the equivalent experience in New Who. You know, you get one episode, or in this case a serial, of a new Doctor, and at first you normally sort of go, "Ah, he's not like the last one. I really liked the last one. I kind of got used to the last one. Not sure I'm going to like this." And then a few episodes in, or a few serials in, whatever, you go, "Holy smokes, this dude is great. Why did I ever doubt him?" Like, every Doctor is obviously amazing. There are some notable exceptions, obviously. Capaldi's first one, if we go in reverse chronological order, I mean, Capaldi's first one was tremendous. The entire world loved Capaldi 2 minutes into his regeneration. Probably, like, actually, they loved him the second he opened his TARDIS and looked at that little potato man. In this case, it follows the Capaldi model, because even though I wasn't able to watch this serial properly, even though no one is able to watch this serial properly, I love Troughton. He's hilarious. I like this sort of slightly confused, kinda dark-ish, like he's still an asshole, and I like my Doctor to be a bit of a dick, basically. I mean, I don't know, not having seen the other ones or listened to the other ones yet, I don't know, he may not always be this confused, but even if he is, I don't mind. It was kind of entertaining. I can see the recorder getting old soon, though, so I hope he doesn't play that all the time. Whatever, alright, yes, I would happily jerk off Patrick Troughton, he is great as the Doctor. Negative aspects, right, I am struggling to think of any. I mean, I suppose you could say there were some plot holes, like the comms suddenly working again, or the Daleks building perfect, and apparently Dalekanium/Dalekanium Daleks out of non-Dalekanium. And I guess the guards putting a surveillance device inside an edible piece of fruit in Doc and Co's chambers was pretty dumb. But then again, I failed to say this earlier, but Quinn and Bragan were practically cracking wise about how goddamn stupid the guards were.
I picked them for their physical fitness. I thought it wasn't for their IQ.
Overall, I'm so sad that this is one of the lost ones, though. Like, not only because it's Troughton's first one, and you want to see a new Doctor's first episode. He's popping his Gallifreyan cherry, and he's entering our hearts. You want to see that, but not just because of that, but because, for all intents and purposes, this is an almost perfect Dalek story. I'm not saying it's better than Dalek Invasion of Earth, or the Daleks' Master Plan, obviously. But the thing is, the Power of the Daleks is not trying to be as grand in scale as either of those. It's the introduction of a new protagonist, and it's using an old foe as not to distract so much from Troughton's performance on screen, and to lend credence to the fact that this is really still Doctor Who that we're watching, right? I mean, that, I think that makes perfect sense. But the thing is, we've had examples of other Dalek stories that tried to be loads more, and that failed in the process. The Chase in Classic Who, for example, springs to mind. This is much better. Okay, here's actually one other slightly sad thing that I should mention. For the first time since Barbara and Ian were on the show, did I feel the obvious episode-long absence of companions. I don't actually feel that close to Polly and Ben at all, to be honest. Like, they're just... I mean, they're not bad companions, but I just don't feel that emotional bond that I felt with Babs and Ian. But obviously, I saw Babs and Ian as the Doctor's companions for ages, and they were the first one, so obviously there's a different connection there. But whatever, I'm getting off track here. Even though I don't feel that close to it's Duchess and Benny, it was still pretty clear that they had been temporarily written out of the serial, and I was not a fan of that. Whatever. I don't want to end this review on a sad note, so I will say, I almost want to hug this serial for its spiffing title. And I cannot believe I didn't get that until I was ranting at the microphone by myself. I love The Power of the Daleks, and I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, not being able to see it properly, and I'm... Oh, crap, I'm stalling. I'm giving it 3.0. I'm giving it 3.0. Yeah. And, you know, to you, dear listener, that may seem like loads. But just to put that into context, it's not as good as The Daleks' Master Plan, which I gave 3.8. It's no Dalek Invasion of Earth, which I gave 4.7. It's also not The Daleks, the very first appearance of the Daleks on Doctor Who, which I gave 4.3. But, also, it's loads better than, for example, The Chase that I mentioned earlier, which, I'm looking at the stats right now, I gave 2.8. So, yeah, suck on them apples. 3.0, Kablamatron. Listener Mini. Shazam, Future Punkin here with a Listener Mini. This one comes from, guess whom? SGamer82, that's right, Steve Meister is back in town with a fantastic mini review. I'm recording this separately because, actually, you don't need to hear the backstory. Here we go. SGamer goes, The Power of the Daleks is, for me, the episode that made me really feel just how dangerous the Daleks could be. For reasons very similar to the modern-day Eccleston episode, Dalek. In this serial, we have a lone Dalek, lone without power, being reactivated by a human scientist. In this situation, that lone Dalek almost immediately devises a cunning plan to not only revive his other fellow Daleks, but even create more Daleks, all under the noses of the humans they've convinced are mere robot servants. Is it any wonder that scientist is driven mad? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I personally feel like he was a little bit loopy to begin with. Anyway, Esglimmer goes on. The Daleks have boasted before and since that a single Dalek could do a lot of damage. This serial proves they don't just mean that because of firepower. It displays what is perhaps the single most absolutely dangerous thing about the Daleks. They do not stop. That is not to say they do not quit, but rather the very idea of ending their crusade to exterminate all non-Dalek life never even occurs to them. Any Dalek, no matter how dire their situation, will be considering ways to exterminate something. They'll never stop, only at best put their crusade on halt. Yeah, okay, sure. I'm mostly picking up what you're putting down, S-Gamer, but I gotta say, like, I mean, yes, it's true. They do say one Dalek is enough to basically slay the universe, but if that's the case, then why would they need to revive all the other Daleks? Maybe the answer is really simple. Companionship. Daleks need company as well. Alright, S-Gamer carries on. This episode is also very important for the Doctor and for Doctor Who itself. I read long ago that The Power of the Daleks is one of, if not the, single most important serial of Doctor Who. I'm inclined to agree, for if Patrick Troughton and the Doctor Who team faltered here, that would have spelled the end of the series right then and there. This may be why his first story is also a Dalek story, to capitalize on the Pepper Potts' popularity to mask any potential fumbles. Fortunately, Troughton comes through quite well as a different creature than Hartnell was, but still showing that, yes, he is the Doctor. Couldn't agree with you more. I absolutely 100% believe that is the case. They clearly used the Daleks, the familiar face as it were, to cement him thematically in the annals of the show. Here we go. He goes on, I also particularly liked Polly and Ben in this story as they have a Mulder and Scully vibe between them throughout, Polly trusting her intuition and believing in the Doctor, Ben going by what he sees and remaining largely skeptical. It's true. I almost wonder if that was intentional to mirror potential fans' responses to this new Doctor in their show. Any modern-day Whovians who make their way through the power of the Daleks will inevitably compare it to Matt Smith's Victory of the Daleks, only less colourful. Though between the two, I think Troughton's story is the better by far. I'm a fan of intrigue. It's the first story of the first new Doctor, and the companions are in good form. I'm calling this episode a 4.3. Holy smokes, dude. Huge heart and a huge high five. That is, as per usual, a fantastic mean review, and I'm gonna say I'm agreeing with most of what you have to say, even though, truth be told, I don't really remember Victory of the Daleks. Is that the Churchill one? Maybe that's the Churchill one. I'm really sorry if I'm wrong about that. But yes, I will take your word for it, S-Gamer. S-Gamer is not done, though, because he adds an addendum. A couple of last-second questions, he says. Number one, do you think it possible that the trick with the water and the sonic lock could have been an inspiration for the sonic screwdriver, which also makes its debut during Troughton's run? Goddamn right I think so, S-Gamer 82. That is absolutely positively 157% what happened, I'm sure of it. Number two, the second and last of his last second questions. Do we know when The Power of the Daleks aired relative to the 10th Planet? Looking at episode guides, both episodes are in the same season, the second and third serials of the fourth season of the show. This makes me wonder if they went from 1 week with Hartnell to another with Troughton, or if there was any kind of gap in between, like later when A Doctor's Regeneration is also a season finale. A very good question, S-Gamer. Hang on while I look that up. And I'm back. Turns out, there was just a week between them. The 10th Planet Episode 4 aired on the 29th of October, 1966, and Episode 1 of The Power of the Daleks aired on the 5th of November, 1966. So, you know, Shazamatron, is that even a week? Yeah, that is a week. Well done! Holy crap, yeah, they literally just went from one Doctor to the next. S-Gamer, thank you so much for joining me on this solo. In fact, thank you so much for joining me and rendering this episode not quite a solo. Fantastic mini as per usual. Ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, are you following S-Gamer82 on Twitter? Are you not? What the shit are you doing with your lives? Guess what SGamer82's Twitter handle is? That's right, it is SGamer82. That's 82, the number. Follow him on Twitter and tell him hi from me. Back to the show. End of this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, holy smokes, thank you so much for listening to me ramble on for this long. You all deserve a hug and a high five. Thank you for being such lovely people. Would you like to interact with me some more? Great. Hit me up on Twitter. I am at Ponken. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponken.
Thank you, JD. Oakley dokley. Join us in our next review. I don't know what kind of review it's going to be that we drop next, but if it's a classic Who review, it'll be The Highlanders, the second Patrick Troughton serial. If it's a new Who review, which is actually pretty likely, it's going to be the 22nd new Who episode. It's The Impossible Planet, which is part one of a double feature, part two of which is The Satan Pit. Yeah, that's going to be exciting. If it's audio Who... just a ridiculous term. I still find that absolutely hilarious. Then it's going to be Wirren Dawn. It's an Eighth Doctor adventure, and I still don't like it. I say that not having re-listened to it since the last time I said I didn't like it, but odds are I haven't changed my mind. That being said, we're still waiting for JD to return. JD, I know you listen to these. Get back quickly. I know you're busy with work. Anyway... when JD's back, we will get to audiobooks and we'll wrap up the Eighth Doctor adventures very, very soon, I'm sure. Ladies and gentlemen, again, you've been a treat. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, blah, 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 blah. I've put all of that in the outro. So long, be rad and excellent to each other, and ciao. Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's at Who Back When, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?